goes by the pseudonym Bo Snerdly.
It's time for the Soul of Excellence.
He is a radio host at 77 WABC here in New York.
The Rush Hour is on the air.
Rush.
Now here's Bo Snerdly on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
Welcome, my friends, to Thursday. It is Thursday Rush Hour here on WABC Talk Radio 77. If you would like to be part of the program this afternoon, 800-848-9222 is the number, 800-848-9222. And as always, the news is overflowing. It is Thursday, which means we check in with Andrew Giuliani. I look forward to it every week. And this week, Andrew, welcome. We can begin with the court activities at the highest court in the land. The Supreme Court today, Andrew, heard the case of immunity regarding President Trump, whether former President Trump, and whether this case, this ridiculous case that's being laid against him by the Justice Department. When you say ridiculous case, there are so many of them. But the one by good old Jack has any merits. What are your take on what we've read so far about what happened at the Supreme Court today?
Well, James, great to be with you as always. You know, I think the justices obviously realize that they're writing a historical decision with whichever way they decide in this case. And from what I've seen, the Jack Smith team, if you will, they have been trying to make the case that this will not open the door to future presidents as they are as they've left office being prosecuted, or other leading candidates for president being prosecuted, which is certainly the concern. And obviously, looking at the timing of so many of these cases that came up, you could take the one in New York as a perfect example. How can you not make the case and see that the reason why this case is being brought is because Donald Trump is the lead candidate for president of the United States? The Southern District of New York, passed on this. I'm walking on the streets and they heard Donald Trump, and I had a couple of people that just yelled, go get him, Trump. So just letting you know, that's where the nice background noise is there. But looking at the Southern District of New York, they passed on this case. That's the Biden Southern District of New York in 2021. Cy Vance passed on this case when he was former district attorney in 2021. Alvin Bragg even passed on this case in 2022. It's when Donald Trump got ahead in the polls where they realized we need to do something about this. And they actually sent the number three guy in the Justice Department, the associate attorney general, a guy named Colangelo, down to become an assistant district attorney. That demotion is basically being one of the top five most important people in the Justice Department to now just being a regular old assistant district attorney. There is no precedence for that in the history of our justice system here in the United States of America. So I think these justices truly realize just how consequential this decision is when it comes to these political prosecutions and future political prosecutions as well.
Now, one of the things that I love is the bit of analysis, Andrew, that the Supreme Court today indicated that any trial in former President Donald Trump's election interference case is unlikely to take place anytime soon. The justices looked at, even John Roberts, I believe, at one point suggested that portions of this case go back to the lower courts so that they could define which acts as a president would have immunity and which private acts would not. One of the contentious moments of today's case apparently came when the president's attorney, one of the president's attorney, John Sauer, clashed with Justice Elena Kagan. And this was over a hypothetical question about if a former, and the question doesn't make sense to me at all, Andrew, I'm just letting you know up front. She basically asked if a president who ordered a coup could be prosecuted, right? And then her hypothetical says if a president who was no longer in office directs the military to stage a coup, would that constitute an official act? Well, of course not. He's not in office, and the military would be under no compulsion, no one, and neither would anyone else, to listen to him give an order. He's not the president. And so the question stunned me itself, and he said, in answer to that, I think it would depend on the circumstances, whether it was an official act. If it were an official act, again, he would have to be impeached. And therein lies the rub to all of this for me. The president has constitutional checks and balances on his actions. Congress, at any point, can impeach a president. And therefore, they can check that president's behavior one way or another. And I don't understand, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a constitutional lawyer at all, but some of these questions that are being asked, I think they're moot point. If a guy's no, a woman is no longer president, doesn't matter what they say. At that point, they're a private citizen. And nothing that they do as a private citizen after they leave office should count as an official act. But at any rate, the fact that this is going to, it appears that this may go back to the appeals court means that this won't be through before the November elections. And if that is the case, this is a huge victory in and of itself for Donald Trump. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely, because it stalls out the process, right, with the Smith case and all that. And I think that's I think that's important with regards to that there. I think it's also kind of what the Supreme Court likes to do with regards to anything that involves a president, a contender, anything in an election year, right? They never like to solve it that year. They like to punt. And look, we saw that in the aftermath of the 2020 election at all, where there was, you know, the Texas case. And vote dilution, basically, that was brought to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court basically did not, well, you could tell they didn't want anything to do with it in that scenario there. So I think your points are absolutely right. And the breakdown, I think, is really, really good, James, on this. And to me, I just kind of look at this and I look at the whole thing. And the biggest question that I have, if you want to go back to one question on all of this, is what is going to prevent a political opponent from going after a leading contender for president in the future? Because that's what we're seeing happening. And I don't know. I hope that the Supreme Court continues to go back to that question as they look through the as they have their decision. But that's the question that I continue to have as you end up going through this whole process.
I just had to laugh about this, your take on the Supreme Court wanting to punt the ball, because that is, Andrew, you have nailed, this is so obvious. And these people on the Supreme Court, despite all that is said about them, how political the court has become, that of course a Democrat talking point, the Supreme Court is doing everything they can to stay out of politics. They don't want this case in front of them. They never want it. They're not eager to have this. It's punt. Get this back to the appeals court and let them deal with it.
For those preparing for the NFL draft tonight, they took a page out of Sean Lendetta's book, I guess, for those crazy Giant fans like I am, hoping the Giants can revive their their franchise here. So,
yeah. Okay, let's turn our attention to what is going on at Columbia University and other college campuses, and this is spreading like wildfire. down in Texas, the governor there, Governor Abbott, wasted no time in sending law enforcement to rout out some of these trespassing ne'er-do-well protesters out of the University of Austin. And I am not saying that people don't have the right to protest. They do. But there are legal ways that you exert that right. And those are not being followed on these college campuses. You have New York, of course, continues this Columbia spectacle with them clearing it, and then these protesters coming back. It has spread to Berkeley and it spread to others. And, of course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has gotten into the mix. She criticized the police officer. She criticized Columbia for calling the police on their own students as if they're not supposed to act when you have students that are wantonly breaking the law. And she's been critical. And the police department chief, John Chell, answered back on social media. He says, Columbia decided to hold its students accountable to the laws of the school. I am sure you would agree that we have to teach them these valuable life skills. And he also said that it's truly amazing. Columbia decided to hold its students accountable to the laws of the school. They're seeing the consequences of their actions, something these kids were most likely never taught. I love the response that he's giving.
Absolutely. I mean, how crazy is this that now you have to have somebody in the NYPD basically scolding a member of Congress saying, we're just enforcing the laws that are on the book that Columbia University actually imposed. It's beyond wild that this is where we are, but this is exactly what the squad and this is what socialism is pushed for, right? This is not social justice in any kind of way or First Amendment rights, because when you look at the First Amendment of anybody that they disagree with, they shut it down completely. They shut conservatives down. They even shut moderate Democrats down. That's the way they actually feel about freedom of speech. But this is just AOC, I think, proving her exactly who she is on all this. And she's just somebody that looks at the NYPD, sadly, and wants to extend the myth that they have been the problem in New York for the last 35 years. When if you look at the job that they did in the city of New York in the 90s and 2000s and how they turned New York City into the murder capital of the United States of America, from the murder capital of the USA to the safest large city in the country, the main reason why that happened is because the NYPD, when politicians get out of the way and get behind the NYPD and let them do their job, they're the best law enforcement organization in the world. So AOC, get the hell out of the way is what I have to say.
Okay. Turning our attention in the moments that we have left, Andrew, to this aid package for Ukraine. Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer out gloating this week that they were taking shots at Donald Trump, taking shots at the Republicans that were opposed to it. GOP critics of this massive aid bill. By the way, before I even get into McConnell and all that business, let me just ask you a simple question. Do you think that Ukraine is going to beat Russia in this war, Andrew?
There has been no plan, no strategy that actually shows that there's any pathway to victory at this point here in any kind of way. And pathway to victory, I mean, it's there's never victory when it comes to war, but there's any way to actually defeat Russia in all this. And you talk to the military experts on this, and they'll tell you this is just a complete stalemate at this point, James. So I'll let you go on from there. But obviously, I look at this, and this just seems to be more of a boondoggle, and more than anything, the lack of transparency on all this money, all this aid that has been given to Ukraine up until this point, is by far the most concerning thing to me. Look, I have no problem. I had no problem supporting Ukraine to a certain extent with the condition that the American people knew exactly where their dollars were going, that you could be transparent with the American people. Once that first aid package went out, and it became obvious that there's a whole lot of money that we can't account for, that we don't even know where it went for. At that point, it became, hey, wait a second. This seems like we are underwriting corruption here more than actually helping the people of Ukraine.
Okay. Now, here we are. This aid package has caused a lot of disquiet in the House of Representatives. You have the MTG wing of the party, however many or few they are, in an uproar saying that the Speaker of the House, who was at Columbia yesterday, he should be resign or be tossed out. You have other GOP critics say, now, okay, we gave $60 million. This is the last time. We're not going to ever give any more money to Ukraine. Americans have been promised, we were promised back when the speaker was incoming, that there would be no aid to Ukraine unless we had a border bill. We don't have a border bill. In fact, news story the other day, received very little attention. This year alone, another 1.7 million illegal immigrants have crossed the border. So I guess we're up to 11 million now. There are people in the Republican base that are rightly outraged over this, the fact that the promise was broken. I have maintained that GOP conservatives do not have the numbers to affect change. They just don't. They are outvoted every time by moderates and rhinos. So nothing, I don't care who the speaker is, the numbers are the same. Where do you see all this headed? Do you expect that if Ukraine comes back with their hand out again, they'll get more, and it's just an endless cycle of giving more money to Ukraine?
Yeah, and I see basically this happening. If Donald Trump wins and he is going to be the 47th president of the United States, then I would expect some kind of an aid package, let's say even in November, as late as November potentially, for this. Now, you could say that there might be others that might hold on at that point. But to me, there's been nothing that I've seen that hasn't told me that these members of Congress, frankly, that they don't care about the transparency of where these taxpayer dollars are going and being responsible with the tens and hundreds of billions of dollars that they're spending overseas here. And the point that you make, I think, is so key to all of this, James, because all of that money seems at this point like it's actually going to cause more debt than anything else. Forever war, which is what this is starting like at this point, it's going to cause a whole lot more thing. Yeah, sad.
And it's Andrew, we got to leave it there, my friend. Always, always a delight to speak with you.
As always, for having me. Always.
And you're hearing Harry Belafonte in the background, Andrew. That is because it's hard to believe that it's already been a year. 1 year ago today, Harry Belafonte passed away, congestive heart failure, at his Upper West Side place on the west, in Upper Manhattan. He was 96 years old. But the music, of course, from Harry. Now, I know. We had this yesterday with Barbara Streisand. As soon as the music started, I said, I can hear the screaming. Why are you playing music from Dan Devereaux? You can say the same of Harry. Harry was very liberal, Harry Belafonte. But I'm going to tell you, I admired this man so deeply. This man, during the Civil Rights Movement, put his life and his career on the line. And he not only was an amazing performer, civil rights activist, musician, singer, actor, he lived a great life. Harry Belafonte on WABC Talk Radio 77, 800-848-9222. Black tarantula, daylight come and we want more. Live 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot.
The Rush Hour is on the air. Attention Ditto Heads. Attention Bo Scouts.
Rush
on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
1979, my good friends. The Police made their debut on British television, Top of Pops. Rocks. With this one, written from the point of view of a man who falls in love with a working woman. Well, working in that particular trade. Every time I hear Roxanne, I also think of Eddie Murphy. 48 Hours. One of the first scenes they cut to is Eddie Murphy in the jail cell. And he's singing a cappella. He's got a little tape deck with headphones on. And he's singing Roxanne. WABC Talk Radio 77. James Golden with you. Okay, you know, we covered the Supreme Court. I really do hope. I hope that this that Supreme Court case today totally screws up everything that Jack Smith and his prosecutors have in mind. I just cannot. It would just be so delightful to see Trump 47 take office, and one of the first official acts is to call Jack or have somebody say, Jack, you're fired. And you guys need to all clear out of the Justice Department right now. And that is looking like it could be a reality. There's a professor at Columbia University who admits to being with the quote-unquote resistance. He said, being it be Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad. He's a professor who admits to being aligned with terrorists. The president of Columbia University, Shafiq, has given seven different answers when asked if this guy, Mohammed Abdal, was still employed with Columbia. She says he will never work at Columbia again. He's grading his students' papers, will never teach at Columbia again. He's been told he will not work at Columbia again. He's leaving. He's leaving. He's leaving. Has a written record on his record. He's been told he has to leave. He's been cited teaching class this past Monday. Apparently, he hasn't got the message that he's left. Even though he is an admitted advocate and sympathizer, and for all we know, maybe something more, he says he is with the resistance, be it Hamas, Hezbollah, or the Islamic Jihad, and he is still teaching at Columbia. What does that tell you? Your telephone calls are coming up. Birthday today, Steve Ferrone. Former drummer with the Average White Band. Best known as the drummer for Tom Petty for the past 25 years. But there's a reason we're playing this. He's also an amazing session drummer. I know because I saw him at a session. But this, some sessions connected with this album by Chaka Khan that Ahmet Erdogan was producing. Omar took me to some sessions, and this band was amazing. Steve Ferrone on drums, Hiram Bullock, the late Hiram Bullock on guitar, Anthony Jackson on bass. He's also played with Duran Duran, Stevie Nicks, Christy McVie, Slash, Eric Clapton, Bee Gees, Skritti Politti, Aerosmith, Johnny Cash, and so many others. Happy birthday to Steve Ferrone. Amazing drummer here on WABC, checking in with traffic and Kim Commando. Then your telephone calls here on Boston Early's Rush Hour. Keep it right here.
Hour with Bo Snerdly.
Goes by the pseudonym Bo Snerdly.
Rush.
Now here's Bo Snerdly.
1994, the Eagles play the first of two shows. They recorded their album, Hell Freezes Over. The name was taken from an earlier quote by Glenn Frey, who said to a question asked when the Eagles are going to get back together, when hell freezes over. Well, they got back together. They made this one. WABC Talk Radio 77 in New York. Let us head to the telephones. Rob in Long Island, you are up. What is on your mind this afternoon?
Early. I just wanted to first tell you that I used to record Steve Ferrone, so that's really amazing. You brought him up doing commercials.
He was amazing. He's an amazing drummer, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he was unbelievable. Yeah, he played barefoot too. And I'm really happy he's healthy. He's still alive. He used to smoke those Jetan cigarettes. I remember that. It was, but he was great. Certainly, the reason I called is I think this is a moment now where I think that the endowments for these private universities should be taxed. They should remove their tax-free status, take the money, tax it, maybe return the money back to the students for burning off the loans. But, you know, with the protests going on, I hear in some of these schools there are actually more administrators than there are teachers. And I think it's also a driver of how intensely high these tuition numbers are. And that's...
You raise such great points here. We don't know how these schools are managed, many of them. And the ratio of administrators to actual students is one issue. The size of these endowments, in fact, in Texas, UT, University of Texas, University of Texas at Austin, has a $52.5 million of its endowment, I don't know how big it is, invested with arms manufacturers, and the students there are demanding, as part of their protest, that college not deal with arms manufacturers. Well, if the students don't like the way the money is invested, they don't have to attend the school. I don't understand why these students think that they actually have the right to tell administrators how the money should be invested. I don't understand what the long game is for these protesters. Do they think that anyone over in the Mideast really cares what they think or what they are protesting for on these campuses? To me, it's just an empty gesture to make themselves feel good. No one in a war zone cares if these little liberals are out, these little liberal students are out trying to virtue signal with each other that they care. In fact, there was a newspaper article where some reporters were sent out asking them about the issues. And a surprising number of these students couldn't even tell you, articulate why they were protesting and what the issues were. So I think you're absolutely right. This is a good opportunity to actually get tough, look at the way that these colleges are running, and to definitely, why should they have a tax-free status? You're absolutely right, Rob.
And also, can I just add, they should originate the loans. Therefore, they'll start selling degrees that they can actually have the students pay back with functional education.
Brilliant. So instead of going to a third party for the loans, the colleges should be the ones that act. These universities should actually back the loans for the students that they're taking in, is your idea.
Yes.
Brilliant. Love it. Thank you for the call. Appreciate your call so much. Alan in New York. Thank you. How are you doing?
Hey, Bo. So I have a hypothesis here, and I want you to follow me on it. In that, number one, the student protesters and their outside, most likely paid for agitators, are not going to be prosecuted for hate speech, hate crimes, or aiding and abetting terrorist threats. Do you agree with that, or do you think that's going to be the case?
Do I think that any of these students will be arrested for hate speech? Ha! Of course not. Alvin Bragg is too busy. Look, Alvin Bragg won't even keep, and New York law, and not law enforcement, but prosecutors and judges have a hard time trying to keep murderers and rapists in jail, let alone kids, students who are out here spouting hatred. They won't even prosecute criminals with violent crimes and keep them behind bars. Fat chance that they're going to keep some of these students or actually hold them accountable for the hate speech that they're spewing.
Well, this is my point. And in the accompanying hypothesis, I believe that this whole thing is going on because the Democrats realize that Trump and the Republicans may start having the edge here. And they're using this as a way to try to curb that. But I got a message for Governor Hochul and the New York State Legislature. And that is, where I live up in Orange, there is a very large Orthodox Jewish community. And I've spoken with some of these people because I work in there sometimes. And they are pissed. They are afraid for their safety. They're afraid for Israel, and they are going to vote Republican and Trump should they be given the chance this November. So the Democrats need to watch out.
Well, I certainly hope that people are reassessing their votes. And I hope that this could be a break in a lot of the traditional coalition of the Democrat Party. One thing that I am advocating for, and I want everyone to encourage it if you think it's a good idea, is that these protesters should all meet up at the Democrat National Convention. They should encamp at the DNC convention this summer so that they can be listened to and their feelings can be taken into consideration. Why go to a college campus where no one cares where you are? The politicians making decisions are going to be at the DNC. Go there and protest in Chicago. Let's make Chicago protest city all over again, just like in 1968. Great call. Thank you. We have a call from Naked. Naked is on the line. Could this be the Naked Cowboy?
I promise you my Trump song. Ready? Trump's taking those regulations off the backs of those corporations. Sounds like a good idea to me. Trump's going to build a wall. That wall's going to protect us all. Sounds like a good idea to me. Going to get the economy moving again. Lower taxes for you, my friend. Sounds like a good idea to me. LGBT's okay, but three bathrooms is a little gay. Sound like a good idea to me. Gonna protect the cops, cause all lives matter. Throw those thugs in the slammer. Sound like a good idea to me. Couple more. Indict them, convict them, throw them in jail. No matter what you do, Trump will still prevail. Sounds like a good idea to me. Hey, Bo, I love you, buddy. How you doing?
Thank you. Naked Cowboy here on WABC. You can catch the Naked Cowboy in Times Square if you happen to be there at the right time. The Naked Cowboy. A command performance. By the way, has anybody taken note of the big thing that happened this morning? Diego, do you know what I'm referring to? This goes right to the heart of the Me Too movement. Me Too. Yes, remember that Hollywood mogul that everyone said was the worst scum of the earth, on the earth, the one that everyone seemed to know what he was doing. No one would put a stop to it. Girls, even though they knew he had a bad reputation for asking them to do things that were unbecoming, still flocked to his hotel room and still dallied around with him. And then later on, of course, they complained that Harvey did terrible, terrible things to them in order to secure their career advancement. That guy, locked up in jail, here in he's out. Well, he's not out. But the court found that he was wrongly convicted. Harvey Weinstein. What does this mean? What does this mean to the Me Too movement? What does this mean to the way we look at bad, bad, bad men? Harvey Weinstein. And it was, people are saying it's a technicality. At the time, I thought it was bizarre, and I said so. You had women who were not involved in the case at all, testifying about the awful things that Harvey Weinstein did to them. That's the nut of it, no pun intended. And Harvey, apparently, the courts took a look at the way that case was conducted and said, nope, this wasn't right. I wonder how this is going to impact what's left of the Me Too movement. We have to check in with Lou Dobbs, ladies and gentlemen. Birthday today, Heavenly, one of America's premier artists. Yesterday we celebrated the anniversary of Louis Armstrong's huge single, What a Wonderful World, going to number one. Today we celebrate the birthday of one of America's premier artists of all time, Ella Fitzgerald. Born in 1918. One of these moments, you'll hear Ella. This is a duet with Ella and Louis Armstrong dancing cheek to cheek here on WABC. Ella Fitzgerald left the world back in 1996. 79 years old, but recognized as one of the greatest singers of all time. Well, we're listening to Louis Armstrong, waiting for Ella. And we'll let you know if she comes in. We got to check in with Lou Dobbs here on WABC. You too. Me too.
On this day as well, U2 started a 5-week run at number one on the U.S. album chart with their fifth studio album, The Joshua Tree. You all know one. I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
U2 on WABC, Lou Dobbs 2, right now.
Rush.
It's the Rush Hour with Bo Snerdly on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
1970. J5. Jackie. Tito. Marlon. Jermaine. And Michael. Together on Motown, the Jackson 5 with their second number one hit on this day in 1970.
James Golden, a.k.a. Bo Snerdly, presents Rapid Phones.
Rick in New Jersey, you are up. What is on your mind, and thank you for waiting.
Thanks, James. There's a story about Kamala Harris's Secret Service agent who went a little bit nuts, took a phone from a senior agent, deleted apps, and then she ended up behind a curtain throwing maxi pads at the other agents. And Netflix heard about this. They're going to make a movie out of it, and they're going to advertise it as a period piece.
Oh, you making jokes about this. Look, it's being called a medical incident. Apparently, the Secret Service agent in question had a medical incident and has been removed from duty. Indeed. Bill in New Jersey, thank you for waiting. You are up next.
James, in connection with what was going on in January 6th and the increase in the liberal extremist areas and crime and social unrest, I think they're trying to push the people to give them a reason that they can call martial law and then they can completely control everything.
I have been hearing this martial law thing for almost 30 years, that the government, regardless of whether it was a Democrat or a Republican, I heard it during the Clinton years. I heard it during the Bush 43 years. I heard it again during the Obama years over and over again. They want martial law. They want martial law. Okay. I've heard it for 30 years. I'm still waiting for martial law. I don't think so. But I'm not going to discount it. Bill, there's something that has been troubling me, and I don't know whether I'll be able to articulate it in a short period of time. What is the end game here for these people? What is the end game? What is the end game in letting criminals out to roam the streets? What is the end game in letting your borders become so porous that you now have maybe 11.7 illegal entries in the last 4 years? What is the end game in not acknowledging how bad the economy really is? There's new numbers today, economy not performing as well as the administration or anyone else has been predicting it would. Also, the EPA, today is looking to hamstring coal plants, again, those that are left, at a time when L.A. is mandating, I'm sorry, California, that everyone flip over to electric cars. They don't have the infrastructure to support a nation of electric cars. We would have to rebuild our entire electric grid. We don't have the infrastructure yet. At the same time, the EPA is trying to do all they can to harm the grid that we have. What is the end game? What do these people want? David in New Jersey, you are up next. Okay. Lauren in New Jersey, you are up next.
Hi, Bo. Yes, I guess a lot of us feel like we're living in the Twilight Zone. But aside from that, tomorrow is the birthday of a woman with character, intelligence, and grace. She's a wife and a mother, and her name is Melania Trump. So I know you love to talk about people's and bring up their birthdays and things like that. So I thought that it would just be nice to say that Melania Trump's birthday is tomorrow. And as we keep everyone in our prayers, we could say some special prayers for her because she and her son are going through a very difficult time also.
You are so wonderful. Thank you for bringing that up and to all of our attention. My friends, time to depart. May God bless and protect each and every single one of you, your families, your loved ones. Love and gratitude for your being here with me, allowing me to be with you. God willing, we are back tomorrow. Can't believe it's Friday, but the Friday edition of Bo Snerdly's Rush Hour at 4 p.m. Hope you are here with us. Until then, bye.